So, good evening. Thank you so much for being here, by chance or otherwise, but anyway, we are here. And we are discussing the entire evening about the future. We are discussing about algorithms. I will talk about the future of algorithms. Should it be appearing somehow? Yeah. And the future of algorithms is apparently to predict the future. Or that's at least the promise that we hear in the field of algorithmic calculations and so on. I'm talking about the recent revival of artificial intelligence combining so-called big data and deep learning, words that you might have heard about, of sort that you have. And now, this new field of research promises to reveal in advance what will happen in the future. There's a research area explicitly devoted to that. It's called predictive analytics, which explicitly devoted to mining data to discover the structures of the future. That's what they say, read the structures of the future. And the promises, if you read something in the field, are really exciting. They are glittering. The idea that the ability to anticipate future trends should help us to optimize the use of resources. For example, in marketing, targeted advertisement to the people who are or can be interested in a certain product, or more interesting, finding out in advance problems or possible fraud, like in banks, or even more interesting, predicting medicine, preventing illnesses, or, tricky already, focusing prevention and crime deterrence on people groups most at risk. We already heard something about that. I will go back to that. So that's are, in any case, positive, exciting ideas, and they are, tend to be welcome. But the idea that the future can be known in advance, as predictive analytic promises, also raises great concerns. There are lots of worries about that. And interesting enough, the worries are not about only the cases where prediction is wrong, but are also, or even more, about the cases where prediction is right. Because on the one hand, of course, we fear that the prediction can be wrong, so it makes error and it leads us in the wrong direction. But on the other hand, and even more, also correct prediction can make problems. So if the guidelines of algorithms are followed, if they are effective, there's a fear this algorithmic prediction, knowing the future in advance, might lead to the so-called preemptive policies. I will go back to that. But policies that's a fear will deprive the future for all of us, of its open possibilities. A negative effect on the future. So my point here, what I would like to discuss with you here, or present at least, is that this enthusiasm and the concerns as well, both of them are legitimate, are motivates, there are grounds for those, but they are partly misguided. Because algorithmic prediction, for good and for bad, is actually, if you look into that, very different from the idea of prediction that's familiar to us. Our idea of prediction, the one we still think about when we talk about prediction, is something that established itself in modern society relatively late, let's say in the 18th century, more or less, and which is oriented and guided by the idea of probability and by probability calculus. There's a lot of really wonderful research on that. But that's not our world, apparently, anymore, if you believe in algorithms. When the forecasting agent is an algorithm and not a human being anymore, then procedures and criteria are different, and the results and the problems coming with the prediction change as well. So that would be the idea, that algorithmic prediction now allows us to do things that were impossible for human beings, even if the human beings are equipped as we are with the tool of statistics or tool of probability. But so, algorithms can do things that we were never able to do, but also faces different problems, especially conceptual problems, which we have to think about a little. So first of all, what do algorithms? How do they work? And, well, I already mentioned big data. Big data is the big fashion and the big catchword in the field. The idea with big data is that this new abundance of data should bring us in a new era where data are not scarce anymore and that can be combined with the virtually unlimited computing capabilities of these new so-called smart algorithms we have heard about. So that's this, I'm telling the story circulating about big data. You can believe it or not, but we have to know what they are talking about. So the idea that algorithm, the smart algorithm operating with big data, can collect and use all the data about the phenomenon, the statistical universe. So the idea N is all. So the number they select is all. So they don't select basic anymore. And we heard in the previous presentation, the problem of sampling was also always a problem in probabilities. That's not a problem, should not be a problem in big data anymore. They don't select samples, they just use all, the entire universe, as they call. Therefore, that's the story. This algorithm would be able to provide certain and objective information. Because they don't select, so they consider all cases, so they can look at everything. But also, and above all, because this algorithm don't refer to models and don't refer to theories to interpret the data. That's the story, of course. So algorithmic processing discovers correlations. Correlation is a big word in this field. And this correlation should be able to reveal the meaning and the consequences of a phenomenon without any theory. There's a huge quote sentence by Chris Anderson, 2008 in Wired. With enough data, the numbers speak for themselves. So you don't have to know theory, don't need to know models. You just have to go and see which patterns are also the big thing in the field, which patterns computers can abstract in the ocean of data. They just look what's there, basically. So that's why the result of algorithms would be basic description, not causal explanation. They are statements. They look at what is there, and they're not explanation as we are used to formulate, connecting relating effects to causes. That's how we explain. That's not how the algorithm works. And I repeat again, that's the story in this field. There's no need to know why it comes to a given result. The algorithm don't care about the why. They just care about what the result is. So the idea, another quote, in the digital world, correlation supersedes causation. We don't need causes, just need to find correlations. So that's a lot of discourse about that. We might like or might not. But my point is slightly different. My point is that, of course, these results require a very advanced technology, something really, really new. But if you look at the discourse about big data, the attitude is not really so new. Or rather, as described by big data theorists, algorithmic prediction seems to revive something really, really old in our society. It seems to revive the ancient divinatory attitude. We have heard about the I Ching in the Chinese culture, still present basically in China. That's amazing too. But in our Western society, divination was something very present in the Middle East and in Greece, and elaborated also in very, very refined, fascinating way. I'm very fascinated by divination in a sense, but not what we refer to anymore. So in ancient times, the future appeared, prediction made sense because the future appeared unknowable to humans, but not to God. And today, if you look at big data, the future seems to be unknowable to humans, but not to algorithms. The algorithm can know the future. We cannot. And that's a similarity between divination and algorithms, but there are more, much more. So like algorithms, divinatory procedures were guided by precise techniques which rigidly provided a number of steps to be taken. You just have to follow these steps like algorithms do. And in both cases, divination algorithms, there are programs. There are programs that are very different from scientific practices because, as we said, they don't want to understand the phenomena, but just to give directions that allow to coordinate with superior order. You don't want to understand the phenomenon. You want to know what to do, basically. And the idea was that the entire universe was articulated in a network of correspondence. In the world, if you know where to look, you have to find the correspondence. If you remember Foucault in the Moelle Shoes, they described this kind of attitude referring to the world. So the correspondence that could be captured identifying configurations and patterns exactly like in big data, in different phenomena. examples, the walnut maple has the same shape as the human brain, which is sort of impressive. The human face reproduces the map of the sky. The foliage of tree resembles flying bird. You find all these correlations, these patterns, and you ask, why are there? What does it mean? What do we learn about the order of the world, finding correlation, finding patterns? So that's how divinatory technique worked. You find correlation, and then with technique, you could draw directions on the decision to be taken or on future events. You know the correlation, you explore them also to predict what will come in the future. And that's why, actually, in this kind of worldview, in this semantics, if you want, the idea of anticipating the future, knowing the future in advance, was actually entirely plausible. Because the assumption about the future was something very different from our future. The idea was that the future existed already and was determined. The future is already decided somewhere. We cannot know it, but it is decided somewhere. So the challenge for men was just to know, for human beings in general, was just to go to know the future. And that's a very different idea than our concept of time and our concept of future. In our concept of time, the future is open. We talk of a future of an open field, which today cannot be known by us, human beings, but not even by God. Not even God could know the future now in advance, for the simple reason that the future doesn't exist yet. The future doesn't exist in the present, so nobody can know it. So our future, the open future of our modern society, is not a given, not something decided, but, as we say, is an horizon of the present. And an horizon, the future as an horizon, moves away as we try to get close to that. It can never be reached, can never be known. That's why our attitude to the future is different, and why modern prediction takes a completely different form. Our prediction takes the form of planning. Planning means preparing the present to face in a controlled way a future that is and always remains uncertain. Since early modern age, the tool for dealing with the future, the tool for dealing with the uncertainty of the future, is not divination anymore, but it is, as we said, the calculus of probabilities. And the calculus doesn't promise to reveal in advance what will happen tomorrow. The calculus of probability doesn't claim to predict the future, but rather to calculate the lack of knowledge of the present about the future, what we don't know about the future, 40%, 27%, so on. And we need to know that in order to take a decision. Knowing what we don't know, that would be the claim, we can decide rationally even if the future remains uncertain. We don't know what will happen in the future, maybe what we do can come out to be wrong, but at least we can know, we can expect to have decided the most rational way. And this is the approach that we have in modernity, the approach that's the basis of the scientific technological attitude of our modern society. So also the scientific approach that produced also the most advanced technique of artificial intelligence and even machine learning, the tools we are using now. But now, as we said, something strange is happening. These techniques, machine learning or algorithmic predictions on, as we said, they use statistical tools coming from probability. Basically, all the tools they use come from probability calculus, but now they promise to predict the future. So doing something that completely contradicts the assumption of the open, unpredictable future, which was the basis of probability calculus. How can it be? How does this claim reconcile with the ontological setting of the modern world? Or how are algorithmic prediction and probabilistic tradition connected and distinguished? Again, we're back to our point. Algorithmic procedure don't actually refer to probability. They reproduce a divinatory model. And divination, as we know, didn't respond to an abstract interest in the future. They didn't want to know the future as such for a cognitive reason, responded to a very practical question. How should I, a particular individual, decide? And how should I behave today in order to be the most favorable condition tomorrow? Very precise individual question. What is the best time to start a battle?
where the best time to sow wheat? Will my marriage, my personal marriage, be successful? I want an answer to a very, very precise question in order to know how to decide. So the divinatory response allowed primarily to make punctual and individual prediction about a particular person, about a particular question. And that's also what predictive analytics does, basically. The purpose of the calculation of an algorithm is a specific indication about a specific person who should be as accurate as possible. Here I have a quote from a predictive analytics book, which is sort of telling about that. Whereas forecasting estimates the total number of ice cream cones to be purchased next month in Nebraska, what probability does, predictive analytics tell you which individual Nebraskans are more likely to be seen with a cone in hand. A particular person with a particular product at a particular time, in August or something. And this is the main difference between the traditional statistics and the new development machine learning. And that's why machine learning expresses the epistemology of a big data, as we said at the beginning. Digital statistics, digital techniques abandon the statistical idea of average man, which we heard discussed on the stage just half an hour ago. And the idea of the average man is the idea of a man of which all elements of the population should be more or less imperfect replicas, which is by itself completely implausible because there's no average man, nobody's the average man, but that's the idea with which statistics and probability works. But now, that's the claim of the predictive analytics, things should be different. The new frontier of customization would lie in the movement, as they say, from the search for universals to the understanding of variability, the difference we heard about, the diversity and so on. Another quote from predictive analytics, now in medical science, we don't want to know just how cancer works. We want to know how your cancer is different from my cancer. So individualization trumps universals. They don't care about universals, they care about specific individuals. The question still is how it works. How can you make this prediction about will this person buy an ice cream or about cancer and so on? And that's an idea in the field. It can work because algorithms are themselves part of the world in which they operate. So they operate in the world from within, not from the outside, referring to a model like probability. And this changes the meaning of prediction. When algorithms make predictions, they do not see an advanced and independent external given. They don't see the future because the future is not there yet. This would be impossible. Algorithms, that's a claim, fabricate the future with their operations. That's why they can anticipate it. In a sense, algorithms see in advance the future that will be there as a result of their intervention. They act on the world to make real the future that they predict. Let's see how it goes. Algorithm predictions, as we said, are individual, are contextual, and they refer only to the specific item they address, a person, an ice cream, a product, so on. For example, the algorithm people use in predictive shopping, this targeted shopping market that targets each of us, the idea is they do not say how consumer trends will be the next season or which product will increase or lower the market share. They have nothing to do with that. Instead, they anticipate which specific product an individual consumer will be willing to buy, even before that individual chooses them, and possibly before the person is aware of this need. They predict that, and they suggest the product to that person. There can also be products that the person did not even know, but the algorithm identified this consumer as compatible with this product, with the feature of the person, with the past choices that the person did, or even, as we know, the choices that people similar to him or her have accomplished. You know the formula. People who liked, who bought this book also liked, bought this other thing, so we know how they work. But actually, the criteria that algorithms use to make this deduction, in a sense, are often or almost always, or nowadays, inscrutable. Nobody knows how the algorithm decides that. In some cases, that's probability, but in many cases, not even the designer algorithm knows how the algorithm comes to this decision. So for example, the user bought a Barbie doll and the system offers organic snacks or a travel to Morocco. So why? Nobody knows it, and actually nobody really cares about it. The point if it works. So how does it go? If the prediction of the algorithm is correct and the person actually buys the organic snack or goes to Morocco and so on, this is not because the algorithm saw the future in advance. The people didn't even know about organic snacks or whatever. But you cannot predict the future also because this future would not exist without the intervention of the algorithm. The algorithm suggests the product to the person, and that's so the algorithm produces the future. And in this way, it confirms itself. It produces the future that confirms the prediction of the algorithm. Or, of course, we don't always buy the snacks or the products that the algorithm suggests. But if the suggestion is rejected, the algorithm learns from experience and becomes better and better. And that's the claim in this field. We will, of course, see now with a more critical eye. But the idea is that the same should happen in all other cases, and also in much more tricky cases like crime prevention. So the idea, the algorithm targets the profiled person, the possible criminals, and the idea this procedure should allow the algorithm, or the police in this case, to act before the individual at risk begins a criminal career. So they identify the person at risk and they act on them. They prevent the future, the negative, dangerous future from coming about. So that's a story. That's why with the due limitation, with some care or so, algorithmic prediction in this story should always be effective. So algorithms don't always get right, but even if when the anticipations are not realized, algorithms should offer the best possible predictions given the available data. So in many cases, the idea they guess the future, but even if they fail, the algorithm should contribute to improving future performance. If you don't get it right now, they will become better and better, will predict better in the future. So that's not exactly what happens. And, well, it can happen, but fortunately, luckily or unluckily, that's not always the case. Because even when it is correct, algorithmic prediction can prove ineffective. And that's something that has been also been observed. So what Adrian McKenzie calls the production of prediction affects the effectiveness of the prediction. The prediction happens in the world, and that's effect how it really can work. So that's we see how it works. If we know who might buy our product, we don't wait until this person goes to the supermarket. We offer it directly. Or if you know that someone will commit a crime, with name, with address, we don't stay at home, we just act. We try to stop the person and to constrain his or her movement to prevent the crime to happen. And this, as we say, can lead to self-fulfilling circularities. People buy products they would never think about before, and maybe they're happy with that, so that meets a need. But also at the same time, and that's a more worrisome aspect, this production of prediction can lead to so-called preemptive policies. And these policies, the risk is that limit future possibilities for all the persons involved. For example, let's go to security measures. If decisions are taken today on security measures about these profiled possible criminals, then the behavior of these people is constrained, but also the options of decision maker are limited. So the police already decide which people to follow. And then if the crimes turns out to happen somewhere else, the police will be watching the wrong people. And that can happen. There are studies showing that it goes. For example, the police concentrated force on the maybe rightly profiled possible criminals. But these people, that they say technically, they have reduced elasticity. They have no choice. They would commit crimes anyway. So they concentrate their force on these people, and other people, rather at the edge, are not controlled anymore. So at the end of the story, crime increases because the people who really would make a difference, they have no restrictions and so on. That can happen. That doesn't have to happen, but can happen. Or in the case of recommendation systems, you only see the responses of users to recommended items and not to other items. Maybe they would want them. And it still doesn't know how they would have reacted to them. or you don't get any information about users for whom no recommendation has been made, or, as we said, on possible criminals. What happens? Instead of looking ahead, looking at the future, when the algorithm will be looking back, and the present will be forced to reproduce, in a sense, the image of the future the algorithm had foreseen. We look forward to the future, but they basically look back to what the algorithm thought would happen. So the present future is reduced to the past future. And the problem in this case is not just the risk of a wrong prediction, which of course can happen, but most of all, the risk of the reduction of future possibilities for all involved actors, for the targeted person, but for anyone else, for decision makers, for each of us. So that's really the real difficulty with the algorithm, because they can be very useful, but they're running risk we should be aware of. So the real point is that you can have extremely refined techniques, extremely refined computational capabilities, but you cannot see a future that depends on what you do following the prediction. So in a sense, about the future they produce, algorithms are and always remain blind. The question, how can you do now to deal with that? How can it be assessed, this condition? That's, of course, a huge question. What we can say now is that, at least that we can say, that algorithms can learn. They're amazing able to learn now. But they learn, but they do not learn to learn. While this learning to learn is often the fundamental component of empirical learning and is the basic of our ability to generalize, to deal with experience. So experience, we know that, can lead us to better learn which ice cream a particular consumer wants to purchase, as the algorithm do, when and in what form. But it could also lead us to learn that the more ice creams are offered online, the less people want to buy them. And maybe they turn to street food or to not marketed products. So in this case, experience teaches us something different. With experience, experience leads us not only to strengthen or weaken the confidence in an hypothesis, but also to discover different hypotheses. That, for example, people want to buy fresh fruit, or that promotional emails damage sales. People don't buy the product because we are pushing too much onto that. So who knows, that can happen. What we know, that in our human experience, the experience of the past does not necessarily lead to expecting the future the same or similar things. The modern sense of time, our idea of the open future, go in another direction. In many cases, the more you know the past, the more you expect the future to be different. So a complex knowledge of the past, the more experience you have, can lead to expect unpredictable aspects of the future. And this is something we can expect. And this is something that structures our relationship with the world. In many cases, we use experience to anticipate surprise. The more experience you have, the more we expect to be surprised. And that's a basic difference between our prediction and the divinatory tradition. So digital prediction today, acts in an incomparably more complex, reactive, and unstable social environment than divination. In divinatory semantics, the idea of predicting a predetermined future could be plausible. In modern society, a couple centuries ago, but even more in this digitized society in which algorithm works, the intensity of communication is such that any prediction, even a correct prediction, especially correct prediction, is anticipated, commented, and reworked, producing new unpredictable complexity. And that's something you have to face. To overcome the specific blindness of smart algorithms, theoretical reflection, what we do, and practical application, how people work with algorithms, should try to find a way to take this into account. That's it.